to the Textual Talk podcast, where we talk about all things related to tech. I want to ask yourself a question. Have you constantly been trying to get into cybersecurity but have been struggling to no avail? Well, in this episode, we'll be meeting with a former client of mine that has not only doubled his income, but we've done it twice. So essentially, we have quadrupled his income. And in this episode, we'll kind of talk about the different things that happen when you get into cybersecurity in an entry-level role and how hard that can be and how much imposter syndrome you face just going through that situation. We'll also discuss on should you invest in your career and why it's a good thing to find good coaches to invest in to get your career going along in the right direction. And we'll talk on some security topics too when it comes to phishing, QR codes, different things with bank frauds, and much, much more. Let's get into the episode. And remember, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave us a review and share out the podcast to help us out in the podcast download analytics. Thank you. Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. It's episode 122, and we got a great guest for you guys today. He's a former guest and a former client of mine. His name is Ricardo Hunt. He is a senior SOC analyst, and we're going to talk about how he got into the field today. But if you're watching this on YouTube, you know what to do. Hit subscribe, hit all on the notification bell so you can be notified when I'm dropping all content. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave us a review, follow the podcast, share it out for those who need to hear this good message today. But Ricardo, what's going on, man?
What's up, brother? What's up?
It's been a long time. It was what? I think I was moving back to Dallas when we first hooked up. So I want to say that might have been 2021 sometime.
Yeah, it was. I felt like it was 2020 or 2021. It was like after COVID.
Yeah,
no, it was after COVID.
It was 2021 because I was moving back, and that's when I kind of had just. Well, I had started like in 2020, but that's when I like started picking up more steam and stuff. And I think I had just started like the pod. But before we like get into that, can you briefly like, just introduce yourself to the listeners and the watchers?
Yeah. So, man, I'm from Louisiana, and Rustin, you went to La Tech, and I grew up in that small city, and I grew up on the east side of town, so it wasn't, you know, the best side of town. And man, like I ended up leaving high school and I went to go play soccer in Kansas City, and then I moved to Dallas after that. I didn't stay long in school. School wasn't for me. I felt like, man, it was wasting my time. I had to, you know, pay for my own things. And so I felt like, man, I got to go and, you know, do my own thing. And I can't be wasting my time at school. And so with that, I was working at Lowe's. And then Lowe's had, I was there for probably like 3 years or something like that, 4 years, can't remember. And then they had like a layoff. And it was called company restructure. And I had some friends who were in tech. And they were like, dog, you need to jump in. You know, you need to get in. And I was like, man, I'm not smart enough for this stuff. I remember I said that. And then they were like, man, like, dude, just jump in. And there was one guy who really helped me with my mindset. And he always stayed on me. And he, you know, told me I could do it. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I got here and how I, you know, I didn't tell how I got started. But that's kind of, you know, a little bit about my background.
Yeah, it's cool because, I mean, they can go back to the old episode if they want to find out more about that. But I wanted to ask you real quick because you said something key. You said something about mindset. And I want you to touch on briefly, I guess you said you stayed on the east side of Rustin. I don't even know what the east side of Rustin is. All I know is about into my junior year at Tech, that's when I started going. I forgot where it's at, but I used to go get my haircut at Nappy Cuts.
Nappy Cuts. I think, I can't remember where Nappy Cuts is, but But Y2 Cuts is right over there on the east side. I can't remember what Nappy Cuts is.
I couldn't tell you the street. I just like, so the dude, I used to stay in, what was it? What's it? University Park? I stayed in Thatcher. Those apartments right there, like right across from really the baseball field. I stayed right there at Tech. And the one of the guys that was my neighbor, his cousin was the barber at Nappy Cuts. I was like, man, who cut your hair? Because back then I used to go just not have haircuts and go back to Shreveport to get a haircut.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, I don't know where to go to get a cut. And I remember I had seen some areas of Rustin that weren't the best. But I actually wanted to ask you a little bit about that, because one of my questions I was thinking about asking you was, we were going to talk about money. And I was going to talk about how I didn't want to presume that you came from money. But I wanted to assume that I know for a fact, I think it's, and I got to double check this. I'm going to have to Google it. But I think per capita,
Ruston is probably like one of the richer cities in Louisiana. Yes. And you see people like with money out there. They just out there retiring. They, you just don't even know. Because my roommate at Tech, Mason, his dad used to play for the 49ers. So they staying in Ruston and stuff like that. But yeah, can you touch on that?
Yeah, so I actually, you know, speak about that. I did come from poverty, like, you know, drugs and, you know, family members and, like, you know, just a lot of dysfunction. And yeah, so, you know, I did come from that. But, you know, for me, the mindset was I knew I wanted different. I saw my siblings, like, they didn't graduate high school. And I was like, I knew I wanted different. I was a class clown. I wanted to act up, you know? And so, I don't know. I felt like I wanted different, but I didn't know how to get different. And I think a lot of people find themselves in that shoe where they're like, man, like, I want different, but I'm so used to the same mindset. Like, everybody around me thinks the same. And, man, it wasn't until I started associating myself with people who were different. You know, they thought different. They grew up different. So you talk about Ruston, like, I started to hang around people, and mainly it was my Christian community because I became a believer. And so I started hanging around Christians, and they thought different. And a lot of them, because of Ruston, like, they were in a different position than we were, than me and my friends were. And so, of course, it was they, you know, they had money and stuff like that. And so it was kind of there where I started to kind of see, I was like, oh, you know, I don't have to do what everybody else does, you know?
Yeah. So, that you were saying that, I had another question too, is I was going to ask, because if you want to be honest, you don't typically see a lot of black kids play soccer. Cause number one, I think there is a barrier to entry there when it comes to price most of the time to like actually succeed in soccer. So I wanted to ask you quickly, like, how did you get into soccer and how did you get good at it to where you can actually go play pro in Kansas City?
Well, I didn't play pro. I just played in college, but
hey, listen, somebody was making some money somewhere. Cause I mean, now those guys probably get like some small NIL deals for being in school. So,
yeah. But the thing is that soccer is actually pretty cheap all around the world because people just get a ball and they just play. And a lot of people come from poverty to play, but in America it's different.
Yeah.
And so
I think it's gatekept.
Yeah. Yeah. In America, it's like everybody send their kids there, you know, the soccer mom, quote unquote, everybody send their kids there because that's what you do when you're young. And so, and it's all money, you know, you got to have money to do that. And so when I got in, I was like a sophomore in high school, and I used to play like, you know, three different sports because I wanted to stay active, man, because I was going to be going to go do some drugs or like be around drugs or something like that.
So you pretty much, and I should have actually asked you this question because I wanted to get my therapist back. And this is the things that you start noticing becoming a parent and everything else. So just life and wisdom. Is do you think the reason you were being a class clown because you maybe were not receiving that attention that you were getting at home?
Facts. My dad stayed like 5 minutes from me, and like we didn't really have a relationship, like talking about it at all. And then, you know, my mom, she was on drugs, so it was just, I mean, it was just different, you know. Like, mm-hmm. And for me, yeah, it was a lot of the attention. Like, I was really attention to, you know, deficit, really. And so I was seeking attention. I remember I went to the alternative school in Ruston, and then I started being good because I got attention for being good. So I was like,
yeah.
I was like,
did any of your teachers ever, because I always say this, I'm a real staunch believer in this. Granted, I think the kids are different now and school is different now. But I came from a time where we actually had some quality teachers, and the teacher wasn't always calling my parents, even though I got in trouble a lot. I mostly got in trouble a lot because of talking. You could say, in a sense, I wasn't really necessarily a class clown, but if I was done, I was just talking too much or maybe disrupting class. And it really just came from just not being challenged. I was never challenged all through grade school with work. Work was never hard. And I tell my mom all the time, I say, y'all should have either skipped me up or put me in a different school. I got in so much trouble for that because we get on that the subject of the whoopings and stuff like that. I said, Mom, none of them things like made me act, but I eventually just grew out of like talking so much and getting in trouble. But I was like, if I would have had more work and been challenged to do and actually have to study, I probably would have did better and not gotten in much trouble. And every podcast, I always say, but look, All that talking I did now, look what I'm doing now. So it's kind of like that foreshadowing. It's like he probably going to do something where he has to talk for a living or whatnot. But did you have like a teacher that kind of either pulled you to side or tried to say something like, you know, hey, you know, is everything okay or anything going on at home? I think because a lot of teachers can see like this kid is really smart, but they are acting out and it doesn't go hand in hand.
Man, Ruston is such a good community. Like, they would set me up with, like, different people that would literally come in, and they would be specifically assigned to me. And these were outside people. They were not a part of the school or nothing like that. And so they would come by, and they would take me. They would, you know, do different things with me and mm-hmm. just try to, you know,
so, like, a mentoring type stuff.
Yeah, mentoring. But really, it was my coaches. Man, my coaches, they really poured their life into me. Yeah. And I started working with them. They started teaching me, you know, principles of life. And those were huge. And, oh, man. And I remember I had a black coach. And he was, like, he had a wife. He loved his family. I had never seen that before. I was like, what? Like, how, you know, like, I'm, yeah. you know, and he listened to Christian hip hop. I was like, whoa, what are you doing? Like, yeah. like, I've never heard anything like this. And so it was just crazy. But in multiple coaches throughout my time. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. I always tell people too that a lot of things, especially when it comes to men, I can't talk about being a woman because I'm a man. A lot of it comes to exposure and what you grew up with. I grew up with seeing multiple successful marriages. You know, my parents are still together. My mom was never calling around seeing my dad was coming home. My dad was there every night. Like I always tell people, like I don't remember a time where I'd never seen him. So I always tell people, like, what you're exposed to, what you see a lot of times is how you start shaping on what you see the world as and, yes. like, different aspects yes. of that. So, like, yes. I used to, like, watch different things from multiple people, from my dad to my uncles, how they treat my aunts, how they treat my cousins. So all those different things, you can kind of pull what you want from different people, and so you yes. can try to be your version of whatever you want to be. And so I think that's important, and that's what we see now. And I know people are like, hey, we don't get in tech, so we're going to get into it. But I'm also trying to reach somebody that may not ever been had somebody to talk to. But what we see now with some of the things that with men or whatever, a lot of them have not had that male presence in their life because, you know, they were primarily raised by their mom, whether it's her fault, the man's fault, whatever it is. But that's what we're seeing. And so some of them are unfortunately like too far gone to help now, but it does start with the kids. So to get to my point, I think this is why a lot of women try to put their kids in sports because of that. On Twitter before, we talked about how playing a sport gives you intangibles that you just don't get out of just going to school. Like, I played football for 4 years in high school as well. So it's like, I got intangibles from that. I know about, like, football. Like, everybody talking about team games, football is, like, the ultimate team sport. You can't just, I mean, unless you're like on offense and you're QB and you're finna just be selfish. And most of the time you can't, if they're not blocking, I mean, you can try to make something out of nothing. But other than that, you can't do much. So I learned a lot from that, working out, hey, how to go ahead and I got to wake up every day and go to the weight room. Now we got to go to practice. It's 100 degrees, running these miles, like all these different things. That's in, your body remembers that. So now we shift that focus and we get into the mental part of it when we come to getting into a tech. So yes. I think you were already set up with the transferable intangible skills to succeed here. You probably just didn't know it because you didn't know, you didn't have exposure to anything in like tech related early on.
Yeah. And I think, what do you believe is possible? You know, like you talked about seeing and, you know, kind of like, you know, you kind of gravitate to what you know and you kind of pick different pieces, but you've never seen it. Then how can you believe it? Mm-hmm. And so, like, I would believe the word that people would tell me. So, like, if I knew you had credibility and, you know, like, I would believe that I could do this because mm-hmm. somebody spoke to me and they said that you can do it. And, you know, even if you got to go further than that, and now as an adult on my own, you know, and not necessarily having, you know, different mentors, I can believe it because I got experience. Like,
yeah.
like I know I can do it. Because I seen it before, and maybe I didn't know that like it was this specific thing, but if it's the next thing, I know I can do it because I've done it before. I got the experience to tell me I can do it. You know, I believe, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And so now we're going to get into So you leave Lowe's from the restructuring. Look, I've been restructured. I just talked about it on one of the other podcasts. Just walking in and they got the sheet say, okay, sign this. Like, at least in my instance, I got a severance. But so you said you met some friends, said, yo, you can get into IT. Let's talk about that transition of getting into IT and what you did and how did you do it?
Yeah, I was kind of like pedaling back and forth, kind of skating in and out of it. And so, like, I was, you know, I heard that you need to study for these different certifications. And so, like, I was kind of in and out trying to learn about what a computer is and stuff like that. But I never really took it serious. But it was when the restructuring happened, because I had to make a decision. I remember my friend told me, he said, are you going to keep working these dead end jobs, or are you going to take a leap? Like, you got nothing to lose. And so I, like, they tried to give me a job making less than what I was making, you know, in their restructuring process. And I was like, nah, I'm good. And so I, like, I was jobless, and I just hit, like, I think Pro TV or something like that.
IT Pro TV?
Yeah, IT Pro TV. And, like, I consumed it. I'm talking about, like, I was in there consuming it. I was, like, every single day, I was just churning it out. And then, like, I was trying to find a job, too. And so, and I ended up landing a job probably, like, a month and a half later.
And what year is this?
This was probably 2020, I believe. 2021, okay. 2020, something like that. 2020, probably. So that's kind of how the initial jump into IT happened, with getting from Lowe's to IT. Like, I was doing a lot of networking, and one of the guys in my church, he was a director of IT. And so I was like, yo, like, you know, when I found that out, I was studying every day. I was already studying every day. And then, like, I was able to, I found him because I was networking in the church. And then he was like, I was like, hey, man, can I, you know, like, just give me, can I get an interview, you know? And so, man, from there, it was like, he hit me up probably a couple weeks later, and the rest was history, really.
Yeah, so during that time, were you at church in Ruston, or were you out here?
I was out here. Okay. That was all in Dallas. This was all, yeah, DFW area.
Got it. So you moved from Kansas City to Dallas?
Yeah, to DFW, yep.
Okay, like most of us. It was, like, I would have, like, if I had known you back then, the only thing I would have said is, hey, you know, you probably can move to Bolger and possibly get your IT job because GDIT is there. Like, that's probably the only thing I would have said. I was like, well, check GDIT out if you if you didn't want to come, like, straight start from zero. And so I believe, if I remember, if memory serves me correct, you were working at a school or the school district?
Yeah, I was working in the school district. Yep.
Which school district was it?
That was Southlake.
Okay.
Southlake ISD.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Carroll ISD.
Kenneth and I were just talking about Southlake. He's like, man, how these people have all this money out here?
Dude, yeah, it's a different monster out there with the resources that they have. Mm-hmm.
So when you were, I'm trying to see, I can't remember because, like I said, it's been so long, because we said it's like 2021, so it's almost 3 years.
It's been 4 years, bro. Because I remember, I mean, it's been 4 years.
I probably can find.
It's been four, bro, because I think I remember it's four. It's been four, bro.
You sure?
It's or three and a half.
I think it's been three. I think it's 2021 because I remember I didn't start my official. I did a pilot episode of my podcast late 2020 with Justice. And then in 2021 is when I actually started the podcast. So that's how I kind of chronicalized everything.
But I met you before the podcast because it wasn't you didn't have the podcast yet, because this was back in the gap when your prices was like $50. I was like,
yeah, I remember that, but I'm trying to, I was supposed to transfer all my stuff from my old Outlook over here so I could see my emails. But I think Calendly still has like the information on when I talk to people, but I was sure it was like early 2021.
Maybe.
I think it was. I think it was early 2021 for the simple fact that right after I helped you, I ended up moving back.
So, okay. Yeah. I do remember that.
So it was early 2021. So I remember that, like, you hit me up like out of the blue. And I think I actually like, yo, where did you find out about me? Like,
bro, you know what happened was I was trying to pass those certs, those CompTIA certs.
Right.
And you and Dayspring were the only ones that really had information out. Like, and you were just, like, I was trying to figure out how to navigate in the field.
Right.
And also, I was trying to figure out how to pass those certs. And so, Dayspring, and you were all about navigating the field. And so, I just ate and consumed all of that stuff. And then I was like, yo, like, I can actually get in touch with this guy?
Yeah.
That was my thing. I was like, I can, you know, like, reach out to him and, like, actually, like, message him. I was like, oh, man, this is by far, this is it, you know?
Yeah, and I always tell people that I'm able to tell what clients of mine are going to be successful from like our first encounter versus who's going to need a little work. And it's always comes from obedience, and not in the obedience, a fact of just listen to me because I said so, but obedience in knowing that, hey, he's not going to tell me anything that's not going to help me. Like, so I think you got that early on because we did your resume. We had the conversation. We did your resume. Or actually, you did it, and they gave it to me.
It was trash, man. Everything I did was trash. And I would send it to you. And I was kind of getting, like, I guess free help. Like, you were at the point to where you were kind of helping me. And I wasn't paying the price that I should have been paying. And you were just like, I guess I just wanted it. And you seen it. And you were like, yo, I want to help you get to where you need to be.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty dope. Like, you were just telling me everything to do. And I was like.
But the thing is, you did it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, everybody doesn't have, like. Like I said, you go going on Dayspring. I met Dayspring in a pandemic. Young 18-year-old kid asked me about, hey, how I do this, this, and this. I'm saying, hey, do this, this, and this. He listens. Go gets an internship, gets a full-time, comes work with me at Optiv. So it's the same way. Like, I always tell people, you just listen. Like, I'm in a decade. Like, I'm going to tell you things I've learned along the way and things I know that will help you be better than me early on in your career. And all the people who listen, y'all are much better than I was early on into your career versus when I started my career. So I'm like, if y'all listening, listen to that. Like, when I'm telling you things, it's to be better than me. I'm not the type of person that's trying to keep you down so I still remain the big man. That's not what it is. I've always did that to try to help you guys because, truth be told, I need y'all to be in for the next generation so you guys can help them. So you guys could be the directors, the C-levels, the managers, and help more black people get in, because that's the hardest part. You go through interviews, you'll start to be able to count on your finger how many people you interview with that kind of looks like you. So that's like another reason as well, like even for the whole platform and everything. But also the funny thing is I bring up your story a lot. We've seen, like, you've seen some of the crazy stuff about since you got into now, some people are doing like some absurd marketing when it comes to getting into cybersecurity. And I've told people on Twitter, I said, you know, I can advertise, hey, I can help you get in cybersecurity in 1 week. Cause like technically with you, it's like a week and a half or whatever. But I was like, that was an anomaly. Like, that just happened. God's timing. You got on, you did that about me post on LinkedIn. It was a video, which I didn't even tell him to do. I just said, hey, post on LinkedIn. He went and did a whole video. And after that, he gave me a call. He was like, yo, I just talked to a Critical Start. And they want to offer me. I'm like the only person with the certs. I forgot. Tell that story of like how you got the job at Critical Start.
Yeah, it was like, man, like you were coaching me through the process and you were like, hey, do all these things. And so I went in and I did all those things. And like, it was like, you know, come in with notes and, you know, ask good questions. And, you know, here's some questions and, you know, just kind of tailored to your style and to what you desire. And, man, from there, it was like, it was just basic things, really. And it was, yeah, it was basic. It was all basic, but it worked, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when we come to anything, whether we can keep it sports related or fixing the basics of doing, like using a screwdriver, lefty, loosey, righty, tighty. That's a basic, but it's still going to screw the screw in when you do it at the end of the day.
Oh, and another thing, I forgot. So this is actually what happened. So there's a backstory to it.
Yeah.
So I was following everybody at Critical Start. I was like, yo, on LinkedIn, I was like, I'm going to follow everyone, you know, everybody at Critical Start. That was my goal. So I did that. And there was one guy that reached back out to me. And I think he was like, he worked at Splunk. He was previously at Splunk. And he was the architect at Critical Start. And he came from Splunk. And so he was like, hey, man, you looking for a job? Like, he said something like that because I was following everybody from the company. And he was like, hey, you looking for a job? And or something like that. I can't remember it. And I was like, I took him out to eat. I was like, hey.
I remember that. Yeah. I remember that.
And we, like, had dinner at, like, BJ's or something like that. And I paid for his dinner and everything. And I didn't even know this guy. And I just was like, hey, let's just go. And I don't even think he mentioned like, do you want a job? He just kind of reached back out to me. And I went and we had a conversation. I got to know how he started his career. And we just had a conversation. I did not know this guy at all. And then he was like, yo, I got you. Like, I'm a put a word in for you so you can get an interview. And that was it. And that was really what kind of propelled me with that situation. And that was even some situations that you had built for me that was still lingering in the background in case that didn't work out. So that was a lot that was building for me, even though I was just in like two, it was like a 2 week burn. That was it.
Yeah. But I always tell people, the people don't believe me because once it happens for them, they're going to like, he ain't lying. I always tell people networking is the equalizer. And I always used to, before Deontay Wilder got washed, I was like, Deontay Wilder, not the best boxer, but if he land that right hand, you might go to sleep. Networking is your right hand. Because if you get the referral from the right person on the team and they like your personality, you are really close to possibly getting that job, especially if you know your stuff. Because at the end of the day, everybody want to work with people they want to work with. If you're pleasant to work with, they want to work with you. If you act like you're a know-it-all, like there's times where the smartest person does not always get the role.
Yeah.
Because your job may be technical in nature, but you may also have to interact with clients.
Yeah, facts.
And so if they can't trust like that soft skill, you are you scaring clients off? I've seen the different stories about people getting in the shower matches with clients and stuff like that. That's not a good look.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
And even leaving Critical Start, like,
well, we're gonna get into
we're gonna
lay it out on the platform. So, because guys, I haven't told you, like, when you guys see the title of this, you're gonna be kind of wondering like how the story behind this title come up. So I'm laying out the first part of it now. I want you to talk about two things. One, because at this time I think all you had was the trifecta from CompTIA, right?
Yeah, I had the trifecta, maybe the CYSA. I can't even
remember. Okay, I think he had like three or four CompTIA certs. Yeah. But he went from, I think, what were you making at the school district?
Dude, I was probably making like 27, 26, 27 probably, 30, 27, something like that.
You went like from $27,000 to $30,000. And then what were you making when you went to Critical Start?
I was making like maybe like 67 probably, and that's with the bonus.
Yeah, but no. Now, mind you guys, this is 3 years ago, and there's still some people that don't even make $67,000 right now. But can you imagine how the possibilities and everything opened up in your mind and expand when you realize, hey, I'm in an entry-level role, and I'm making $67,000. And I want to, and that's why I want to touch in on when you said you had the Christian friend saying, hey, no, you can do this, think big. Is that the moment when you realized that, hey, I can do this, and there's money in this career for me?
Yeah, but I said that in the beginning, though. So I believe that in the beginning.
Well, I know you believe it. It's good to believe it. But when it actually happens, it's another switch that goes off.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But I remember, so I had a friend, one of my Christian friends, he worked at Cenac. And this was the one helping me with my mindset. Just like he said, man, when I got the job at the school, he was like, you made it. I was like, what? I made it? How I made it? Like, it's like, this is it. And he said that because experience is king.
Yeah, you're right. Because you know? I know one of my past clients, Travell, he went from, I helped him, this was last year, he went from being in construction to a junior cloud engineer. And he reposted a text message thread that we had with each other. And he was like, and I said, hey, yo, your career just starting, you about to blow up, you about to take off. And he had reposted that just to like to kind of show Instagram, like everything, like I said. Because I like, I always agree. I always say, when you get that first job, like, you got it. You're going to be good.
Yeah.
And I was like a lot of times, hey, tunnel vision, don't get caught into all the lifestyle content. Just focus on your skill set and you and put your head down and you're going to grow.
Now, I mean, we got to get into the difficulties. Now, I can't say there wasn't any difficulty.
Oh, no, we're going to talk about that.
Transitioning to the next cyber, into cyber.
No, we're going to talk about that because I like, because people always say, well, hey, we want some people that's like early on or early into their career. So I like also bringing them on too, but I'm definitely going to talk about that, right? Talk about going from pretty much like a field technician, desktop technician to now a SOC analyst at a, I want to say they are what? They were an MSSP?
They're MDR. So a little bit different, but yeah, it's, they got the MSP feel to it.
Yeah. And all that means is they manage, depending on what they might manage for a company, is they are probably doing SOC work. Also, they may be doing some incident response for them as well, because some companies either it's cheaper for them to outsource it or they just don't have it built up internally yet to have that functionality. So that's why companies like that exist. And honestly, sometimes they are some of the best places you can start your journey at, because you get to see different environments and learn different things and different tech types. Sometimes you get stymied early on in your career if you're in a company to where it's not a lot of action happening. So it's kind of like, it gets kind of like boring quick because nothing's happening. That can stymie your career. So like, it's really best to kind of be thrown in the fire, because once you kind of come through the fire, you're going to come out gold. So let's talk about the struggles of when you became a SOC analyst, and also talk about like why. I'll add this too. Talk about your struggles, and then how people always just think it's just some easy entry level role that, you know, everybody could do. Because people come to me with the misconceptions like, oh, I want to do this. I want to start my career off and just be, you know, entry level SOC analyst. And I'm like, I hate to burst your bubble. It's 2024. It's not too many entry level SOC roles now. But let's talk about your struggles.
Yeah. So the main struggles that I came into was just, it was all different for me. It was like new, you know, like I had been doing IT stuff, but it's different from security. It's a whole different monster. It's different conversations. It's, you know, security deals with everything. So you're not just dealing with one thing, or, you know, dealing with, you know, fixing like software issues and updating stuff. And, but you're like now securing a lot of different things, and, you know, you're learning how to use these tools. You know, if you ever learn something new, you know how it feels, and it's all new. You know, like there's some parallel, but you're probably working in like 10 different tools.
Yeah.
15 different tools. And you're trying to also learn the concepts of security. And, you know, you're learning about, you know, there's like, I think there's like, what, four different main domains, which is like networking, endpoint, access, and cloud. Like those are like, for me, those are like, you know, how I group things. It's always got to come through the network. It's always got to come as a file or some type of, you know, file based detections, or you got some type of access issues. And so like, you kind of got to learn how to categorize. So you kind of come in from a high level, a high view, but then you can't work the alerts if you don't know what's, you know, in the weeds, you know? So it's just like, it's a lot to take in, but kind of, you know, kind of figuring out how to think about the thing, like how to categorize it, how to group it, how to break it up and break it into pieces, really helped me. But like, it was a struggle, man. Like, I really felt like I had the imposter syndrome. Like, it was like, I felt like, man, like, you know, a lot of people I felt like were smarter than me. They had, you know, they could, you know, because I had just picked up a computer. Like, before this, I hadn't really touched a computer at all, even before I started working IT. That was my first time really touching a computer, literally. Yeah. And so,
but I think that's also a little bit generation based. Y'all, by the time you got to be like in high school and in middle school, there was more technology that didn't really need you to use. Like, you use your phone to do a lot of stuff. We used to have to use a computer for.
Yeah.
When I was in high school. So that's what I'm saying. That's like, it's also like that difference, because that's one of the things that they talk about now with Gen Z is like, hey, Gen Z don't really know how to use computers like that.
And I hated computers, to be honest. Like, legitimately, like, there was no reason for, like I hated computers. Like, I actually got hacked when I was in college because I called a fake Amazon, and I was kind of doing it, like, flippantly. You know, I was like, you know, like, I didn't get my package, and I was like, man, I'm going to have to call these people. And so I just looked up the first number I seen, I called, and I gave them remote access to my computer. And on top of that, I logged into my bank account. And that lets you know the amount of, like, hope there is and the realities of, like, I would probably never get hacked today, you know, because I hardened myself, you know, like, and obviously anybody can get hacked. But, like that lets you know, like, it's just a knowledge gap. Really, that's the difference, you know. Yeah. Anybody can do this, you know.
Yeah, anybody can. It's also like a... That's the little tactic they like to use. Hey, it's not actually the site, but it's going to show up in the search thing to where, like, it's Amazon and you go to it and look at it. But that's also another, there might be like a separate either a live stream or episode where we talk about, like, I don't want to say call you a kid at the time, but like, kids are online now, but they do not know how to remain safe online and do not know how to differentiate between what's legitimate and what's not. So that's definitely a thing to talk about. But it's funny, you remind me of my friend Marquise. We was laughing at him because I think he either got hacked or whatever years ago, and now like he's like doing like Splunk engineering, Splunk architect work, and we like laugh at that all the time because at the time he's trying to get in cyber. He was like, man, you trying to get in cyber and you just got hacked or something. But I think he also was using like a Fire Stick or something at the time too. And you but know how that can be.
Anybody can do this, man. They really can. You know, it's like it's open to everybody. It's welcoming to everybody. And, you know, you can do it.
Yeah. I think it takes a certain mindset for certain people to do certain roles. Because I tell people, hey, the thing about, so here's what I do now that's different from when you reached out to me. Because technically you just want to get into cybersecurity, but SOC just happened to come up for you because you were already doing like some technician work. But now when they reach out to me, I say, hey, go to my LinkedIn or I'll send them the link of those SOC analyst interview questions. I had a guy reach out the other day. I'll actually, let me see if I can find him in my message request. But he was like, yo, I got to interview to be a, you know, a SOC analyst or something. And I need some help. Where is he at? Is he here? Let me see. Maybe I put him in general. Let me see. Dang it. He just hit me up. Oh, well, so that's actually a good thing. So look, ironically, when you think about people, they come up. But he had said, I sent him the things. He said, okay, so I did the questions and I was able to answer three of them. So I don't know if that meant like he was only able to answer three or he only got the three. But I do that for everyone now because it helps them expand on the thinking part of working in a SOC.
Yeah, facts.
Because a lot of your like interviews now, you can take out your notepads. Some of them are getting away from tools because tools, two things, they make stuff easier a little bit because you don't have to do as much manual stuff. But if you don't even know, it's like one of the reasons why I'm against like pinpoint, do this, do that, do that, do that, do that, do that, do that type of playbooks for analysts. Because if you box them in like that, they won't be able to think.
Facts.
So some interviews are a little bit more abstract where they're saying, hey, take all the tools off the table. Let's see what we would look at manually with these logs, what you kind of look for, how would you do this, what would you do this, this, and this, and this. And so that's the kind of, like you said, the concept and the theory.
Philosophy.
That you got to think about.
Yeah.
Why don't you do this? And sometimes I'll help people. Like it was a guy, we were talking the other day on the phone. I mean, well, a consultation. And he was like, well, I want to get, you know, be a SOC analyst. And he does IT stuff, but he had it like, oh, I'm doing incident response. And I was asking him, so are you actually doing incident response? Or if somebody calls in, they need like antivirus something on their machine and something removed, are you doing that? Well, I think I'm just moving files. I was like, well, that's cool. But I was like, be careful with saying you're doing with IR because they might start asking you IR stuff you don't know. And so I was asking him, it was some question about like, what would you do if you got a phishing alert, right? Just keeping it regular, like simple. And then he started saying, well, I don't know. I would do this and that. But I was like, okay, let's back it up. I was like, it wasn't a phishing alert. I think I'll say like, how would you handle if you got an unauthorized like authentication alert or something? And he couldn't kind of think through it because I was like, okay, it's a mental block there. So let me help him with this. I said, somebody broke into your house. What would you do?
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
What would you go check? What would you go look for? Then I said, okay, now I was thinking about the same thing. Somebody logged in. What are you checking? And then that's when the kind of like the light kind of clicked on for him. I was like, a lot of this stuff is technical, but in a sense, if you can kind of make somebody kind of connect the dots, they'll have an easier time with it.
Dude, that's why I like categorization and you know, just having a thought process of like, how do you like think about thinking, you know, like how would you like navigate the scenery? You know, like what does it look like, you know, cause all these tools are different.
Yeah.
And it's like, but if you don't have the tool in front of you, but you know what you're desiring,
that's it.
Then
that's the key.
You can try to see what the tool can give you.
That's the key. Because I've had interviews with like, well, do you know like SQL or this? I was like, no, but I'm like, I know what to look for. Well, I'm going to say like I've used it in the past, but I was like, the real key is like, hey, I may not have the query down, but if I know what I want to get, I can fix the query. I can figure out what I need to get. But if I don't know what I'm looking for, that's a bigger sign than me not knowing how to put a query together.
Man, because there's so many tools, bro. Like you would spend all
day. And most of them, when you really break it down, a lot of them are, the languages are kind of based off of like a SQL or something else. And it's sort of similar. So like you go to Sentinel, KQL, Splunk, SPL. If you want to go into like EDR, it's like a CrowdStrike. That's similar to Splunk, but I think they're changing that query
to the Raptor stuff. Yeah.
So that's about to change a little bit. But in theory, all of them's similar. Most of them use Booleans. Some of them use double quotes, single quotes. They're similar.
Yeah.
So if you kind of just get the grasp of the foundation of what you need to get, you can kind of build off that. So much help now when it comes to Reddit. So much help now when it comes to like, I love using like Microsoft Copilot now. Like you can tell this, hey, break this thing down to me like I was 5 years old and make it simple for you. But not to get off the rails with that, because that's definitely, we'll probably get some more into that. I want to see if you remember this. Well, not, I'm asking you like something I asked you previously, but do you ever remember like maybe like the hardest alert that you worked earlier on at Critical Start that maybe like had you like kind of flustered?
Camel casing. Like camel casing is where you have different commands that are being ran, but it's like, you know, like lowercase, capital.
Yeah.
And it's just weird. I'm like, okay, there's nothing on this screen. And like, you know, this is weird. And so that one had me very frustrated. Cause I was like, I didn't know that was malicious. I had no idea.
Yeah, because it makes it look like, it's like one of the things where, let me see if I'm thinking about this right, because I've seen this a lot of times where you got like two where it's looking like it's the same type of URL, but one of them is not the same URL. If you look at it real close, they've changed, it's either like a letter or a number, but it looks like it if you click on it real fast. And so you really got to inspect it, be like, hey, this is the legit one. This is not the legit one. So you got to pay attention to
that. And I've seen like spoofing to the highest degree, yes. Like where it's like somebody had changed one little thing and they'll interrupt an email conversation.
Oh, no. We're going to talk about that. Like, in your industry, that's what they do.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. We'll talk about it. And we'll talk more even offline about it. So you did... Because I'm trying to chronicalize this. So you stayed at Critical Start with like about almost 2 years?
Almost three years.
Yeah, it was like you get there in 2021 and then 2023 you leave.
2023, yeah.
That's right. You know what's crazy, bro? The time goes for me so fast. I wouldn't even knowing if I was like, if you called me in 2023 or 2022 when we talked about like the new situation. But what are some of the other things that you learned about? Well, let's do this. I'm trying to educate the people some more. Because I think you guys had like a home-based proprietary SIM that you're using, right?
Yes, a SOAR. So, I mean, that another thing.
Oh, y'all was using Exabeam, right?
No, ZTAP.
ZTAP, that's right.
Yeah, so a proprietary SOAR, which is a great SOAR. But another thing I was going to say is with the SOARs today, that's another thing with the tools, you know, it's like, you're spending like 70% of your time in your SOAR, you know, not 70, but like 60% of your time in your SOAR. So anyways.
Well, if you don't even get me get started on SOAR, man. I always talk about, I was like a top security voice for a little while because I was contributing to the articles and I was talking about like using SOAR now. And I was like, hey, some organizations actually don't need SOAR. They just need to have their rules good that's coming into their SIM. I was like, you're not even mature enough on this end. And now you just want to throw a tool in here that's really kind of useless in a sense that it's not benefiting anybody. That's been the rage. You find out as you keep working, a lot of companies will get a tool just so they can sell to a client. Hey, we got this. Hey, come let us monitor you. We have this. Or you guys got this. Okay, we can do it. And the client that you're supporting got it for no reason and they don't really need it. You find out a lot of that.
Yeah. No, I could definitely see something like that being the case for sure.
But what other, outside of like learning about SOAR, and for you guys that don't know what SOAR is, that stands for Security Orchestration Automation and Response. And in theory, you can get as granular with SOAR as you want to, which is a benefit because when you start working in the SOC, you start realizing that there is no shortage of logs. You start seeing new logs coming in every day and new alerts. So it benefits you. Like you can bring up all different type of use cases. That's the way like I always try to market myself for doing different things or being out of the box. Like there are always two things. You got the engineer and then you have the analyst. Engineers really good a lot of times if they've never did analyst work, but they're really good at understanding the engineering portion of fixing things, the script and everything else. But the analyst is good at is like, hey, I know how it feels to work these things. Let me tell you what'll be beneficial to us. So even something simple is like if you're seeing a service account, an alert came from a service account, hey, Let's get the API for whatever ticketing system we use and say, hey, do we see any change tickets or rhythms or da 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 for this thing and put it in here so we don't even have to go look at that. So nice. If nothing returns, we know, okay, there is no rhythm going on. Let me go to the second thing about who owns this thing. Let me reach out to them. Like, because that's what a lot of people don't know. And it's technical, but there are also times you can save yourself by not trying to be so smart by like, man, let me see if this is a ticket. Let me see if this is a change. Let me reach out to somebody on this team. Because a lot of times people be doing some work on their environment and you're going to waste your time trying to just look through it when you can just like, man, this look like somebody doing some work. Let me reach out to them.
That's why the best thing is knowing your environment.
Yep.
You know, knowing like, you know, having access that you need to like, you know, maybe depending on what, you know, ticketing system you got. The ticketing system, you know, make sure in that, you know, just basic things like knowing how things work, you know, that will help so much. In a SOAR, you can get a little bit of the things that you need in front of your face,
right?
Which would help you in time wise, you know, to know if this is bad or not, you know, if you need to
tell me about it.
Yeah, go granular. So,
but I was going to ask you at Critical Start, did you ever like work on like a, and then at a high level, did you ever get to work on like an incident or were you guys strictly level one, level two, and then passing it off to the XDR part?
No, we actually got the work incident. So they, you know, it was like the problem with MSSP and MDR and all those things, you go really as far as the tool goes, it's like an inch deep. So the problem with those is that, yeah, you see all these different things and you work all these different things, but you're trying to get it to that organization. So your job is to get the information that would be essential for the organization. And you need to respond. Maybe somebody, you know, respond in a host isolation or something like that, or, you know, blocking something, blocking a hash or something like that, whatever it is. But for the most part, you're trying to get the write up to the client so that they can take the proper responses that they need. And, you know, then you go on about your business. So I say, that's why I say it's an inch deep.
Well, it depends. So like, if you have a good relationship with the client, then they'll start letting like your senior people do stuff. Like, cause you have, like we was talking about with CrowdStrike or any other EDR where you can do CrowdStrike, you got the RTR. So
yeah, facts.
You can go in, like you said, remove a file, start searching for stuff. You can get files and start analyzing them on your own. So there are different things they'll let you do if you built that relationship with them and your team shows that competency that you can do that.
Facts.
Now, him and I would talk all through this thing, and I think he had got to the point, he's like, man, I don't know if I want to do this anymore or this or that, which I understand. And I'm my person too, like, because I've like been your age before and these different things. I'm like, look, hey, that's all good and everything, but you still got to like earn your stripes. Like, hey, I don't care enough about all that. Listen, just do this to get where you got to get. So in the next whatever years, you can start just getting the opportunities that you want. And so we were talking. And he was like, yeah, man, I'm finna sign up for services again. I need to branch out or whatever. And so we did. I think that one of the first parts of working back together was I connected you with E.
Yeah, which was a great connect.
Yeah, E is actually doing, I think, architect work now for HD Supply.
Whoa.
Yeah, so he's doing some security, I think, architect stuff for them. So, yeah, man.
Smart
like
smart guy.
We all... And I probably can probably add you to that chat. It's like all of us is like doing like our SecOps, IR, forensics, different type of things where we're talking about like business moves, like we're making individually or, hey, have you ever seen this? Have you used this tool? And those are the things I didn't have early on in my career. I didn't have a network. Well, we did, but we didn't talk as much. But I had to start. That's from 2020 to now. That's what's changed. My network of people who do similar things that are having different connections has grown tremendously and has helped me be able to grow, you know, individually and personally and professionally. That's the key that I'll probably tell everybody is like, get online, find some people with like minds, and y'all start like a group chat so y'all can talk about different things. Like, you can get somebody word up, hey, we seen this file like go crazy in their environment. You guys might need to hit up Threat Intel and tell them about it.
Facts.
And you can
awesome.
You can be
on Reddit.
Yeah. You could be on it ahead of time and it start making you look good if you know that. Or if it's something that you need help with, somebody in the group is better skilled at something than you are.
Facts.
You can learn. Like, forensics is the one I've really been working on getting better at, like, especially when it comes to Linux. Like, that's the one that I've been working on because we know most environments are not really heavy Linux. Most of them is Windows, maybe Mac OS, but Linux, if you can learn, if you know Linux, you pretty much kind of know Mac OS. It's not too much of a difference there when it comes to directories, and the commands are pretty much the same. So, but yeah, so I think the first time was like you did that and you really knocked it out of the park. But I think that just, I want to say that was like been more of an engineering role, I believe. I can't remember.
Oh, the next role?
That role that you had, that you hooked you up with, interview with E.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that one was, yeah, it was like, I think analyst or engineering. I can't remember.
But yeah. Let me, all right, guys, let me also tell you about the type of coach I am. And friend, because I do this plenty of times. I am a person that a lot of times I try to record my stuff if I can. If I can't, I'm always taking notes so I can help out. So we will not be releasing kind of where he currently works. But I didn't really get a chance to prepare. But so I was like, I'm just going to wing it and see what's up. Because I thought it was just going to be, typically that first interview is kind of like you just talking. It's not super, you know, expecting like super technical questions. I'm always expecting like the interview after like talking to a hiring manager is the one that I'm going to actually like prepare for. But so we're talking, and I think still at that time, I want to say that I still was a little bit rusty because at the current place that I think I was at that time.
And you were content. Like, you know what I mean? There's a difference.
I wasn't really content.
But you weren't like trying to like break your neck to move forward. Like you were cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I'm normally like that unless it's like something I really want. But that's the thing I'll tell you about when you start noticing like, hey, this ain't enough action for me. And you start realizing, okay, I got to do other things to build my skill set.
Facts.
But I did that and I was like, you know, a couple of things kind of tripped me up on that. And I didn't get the gig, which was cool because, like he said, I wasn't tripping. But I had already told him. And, like, anytime I get a recruiter's email or something like that, and I think I know somebody can do the gig, I immediately send it to him. I say, yo, this the recruiter. I'm going to hit them up, tell them I sent you the way. This is what you need to know, X, Y, Z. And then he goes and does the interview, and he knocks it out of the park. And I believe that was in, what's that, May?
That was probably May. I can't remember, but
I think it might have been May because I was coming back from a work trip like in Orlando or something.
Yeah, yeah. And Ira, you kept a very high level. Like you just gave me like 3 points. You said, hey, focus on these three domains. You know, like that was it. Like it wasn't like, you know, but it was, but you had always been that way towards me in regards to work. Like you always have tried to make sure I get the work that I need. You would send me this, say, hey, go interview. Like, that's why I do coaching with you. Like, to this day, I still do work with you. Like, if I'm going, I'm sending you, you know, I'm booking you again. And I don't even think about a booking relationship no more. Right. I think about it as, if I was, like, you know, financially, you know, investing in my future.
Right.
I think about it like that with my career. Like, I know
a lot of people
that
don't.
I got you in my back pocket, you know. And every time I make a move, it's just another option for me. You know, like, hey, I know I got Unray like right there as an option. And so I'm doing all these different things in my process as well. But I know now I also got Unray as a coach. So it's like it's just an additional package that I'm bringing to my hunt. You know, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, that's how it is, too. Like, I tell people all the time, like, you get access to me, but you also get access to my resources. Because there could be a time that he sends me something like, I think we got this entry-level gig up, and I might say, I think I got somebody that can do it. So, because the hardest part, this we're going to really just nitty-gritty. I think the hardest part, too, for people getting into cybersecurity is, like, the interview. Because there's so much somebody can ask you. So even just having some bullet points say, like, I wish they kind of make it in like school in a sense. Sometimes I've did some great interview processes where they broke them out and said, hey, you guys will be talking about this. This interview will be with this person. You might be focusing on this. I've been in those processes before and they're great. But other ones, you're just kind of like, okay, they're going to ask me about the role, like somebody may see in the role, or they're going to ask me like hypotheticals. I don't like scenarios that I possibly will not see in the role because of based on how the environment is. Like, ask me what I'll be doing like every day, because you know, and I know that, hey, that's not going to happen here. You know, we know that's not going to happen here. So don't ask me that. And it's just different things. I like to try to just ask kind of stuff like based off of what I see on the resume, what I think may happen or what I've experienced. And I'll try to guide you to like maybe like not the right answer, but if I feel like you got it, I'm like, okay, hey, think about this. So that's the hard part for people. They just don't know what to study for. And I try to come in and help them with that. Like if they say, yo, I'm interviewing for this, and I'll pick out something that I think may be imperative for them, I say, yo, how good are you on these topics? It was like, I don't know that much about them. I was like, well, go read up on them and, you know, please record this thing so we can talk about it. Because that's the key. If you can record your interviews, just listen back to them and see where you was rocky at and learn about them. That's how I know Linux Forensics is one. I was interviewing with Cloudflare. It's like the second time around. And I'm a very, one thing about me, anybody tell you that like recruiter-wise that I got personal relationships with and we talk about stuff, if I'm talking about how I think I did in the interview, I'll be honest. I know when I killed it. And I know I was like, you know, I was solid. I was like, I know there's points where I could have been better. And that process was like only one area where I was like, I did good when it came to Windows Forensics. But when it came to the Linux stuff, I was a little rocky. And the guy I was interviewing with came from like Falcon Complete. So the only reason he knew the Linux stuff was because at CrowdStrike, you can get access to like different environments and have to like not really have a tool. You just get the logs and you start working through them. He was like, that's just one of them things you're going to probably eventually see if you get a chance to do it. So it's
and you learn a ton. I'm sorry, you learn a ton when you interview. So just interviewing, you know what's popular. You kind of you may not ever touch it, but you'll know so much about what's current. You know you'll you know it's a process too. Like a lot of times, you just gotta do multiple ones, and then you know you'll get your footing and you'll figure out, oh, this is how they all work. You know, and yeah, and you just keep doing it. You know,
but now. Let's talk about this. Now, at this new place, what did you go? So you went from, what was your ending salary at Critical Start?
It's probably like 67.
Okay, so you went from 67 to how much in this role?
Probably in the...
I'm talking about TC. Just give us TC.
Just TC, general?
Like with your base and like bonus.
Oh, probably like 120-something. I'm just throwing a numbers out there.
No, but I always tell people, everybody's just trying to hit the home run in the beginning, but I was like, if you just get in, get your experience, your life will change. So this is 2 years. So we went from 2021 to 2023. So this is 2 years that he's doubled the salary twice, or you could say quadrupled the salary. That's how fast life can change for you if you just stay down and put the work in.
Yeah, no, that's facts. And there's... And really, the crazy part about it is when I was at Critical Start, I wasn't the smartest guy. I wasn't the guy people looked at was like, oh, yeah, like, let me go. You know, I wasn't that guy. But I knew that I knew what I wanted. I knew what I was, you know, I knew what I desired. And I always thought ahead. You know, I was always thinking ahead. I was always like, yeah, everybody was very content with where they was. And I was like, nah, that's not me, bro.
But most of the people who are content probably just don't have friends that are doing it. Because when you have friends that's doing it, you'll think, and it's not, and like, I'm so glad, Mike, my generation, y'all generation, we're not as taboo about money because it helps people know if you're being underpaid or not.
Yeah. And let me switch that from contentment to complacent. Like a lot of people were complacent. I was content, but like, you know, maybe I had to struggle with contentment, but I wasn't complacent, man. I was like, nah, like, I want to think a step ahead, you know? I'm like, because I'm my own brand, you know? Like, you know?
You're your free agent of your career.
Yeah, you're the guy, you know? You're not building the company that you're at. You're building your own brand. You're the CEO of your family, you know?
Yeah, man. Like, I would say the crazy thing is what I tell people, too. It's like, now you're finna start getting to the territory where the next time you maybe talk to recruiters about jobs, your salary that you ask for is going to make you a little bit uncomfortable. Like, that's the territory you want to be in. Like, it's cool, you know, you're at the whatever market, and it's not to talk about, like, you know what I'm talking about in general. But now, now you start seeing, like, you know, 4 or 5 years experience, you're going to be looking at the market. Hey, so what would it take you to come over here? I want 175, 180. Now, your mind, you're like, dang, that's a lot. But then you can start looking about it. It's like, nah, that's my just due. But it's a lot of people that's listening and watching this that couldn't fathom it because they hadn't touched it. And so that's why I tell people all the time about not selling with your next salary, because once you get there, that company's probably only doing a 3-5% raise every year. So you're not going to get a chance to make a lot more money in that role unless possibly you get a promotion. And sometimes even a promotion, they don't give you that much money because HR policies. A lot of times you got to leave and come back to get paid. So with that being said, try to get the most every time you negotiate. Every time. Like I helped one of my friends, just like I'm always been a person like this. We met, she did a pod with me and Eric. I was like, man, this girl is super smart. This woman, she's super smart. I was like, we was talking behind the scenes. I was like, yo, what are you doing? I was like, and I think she stayed in Cali. I said, what are you making? I was like, what? I said, we going to help you. Well, I'm going to help you get some more money. And I will tell you, in the next couple of months, we end up doubling her salary. But that's how I am, though, because a lot of people don't know. We don't have people in the industry to know. And I'm like, your skill set with DLP and insider threat calls for this. They underpin you and they know it. I'm going to help you out. And that was like, she didn't owe me nothing. Like, it wasn't a coaching package or nothing. She just started interviewing. She sent me the stuff when it came to negotiate. I helped to negotiate. That was it. So.
It's crazy.
Man, so I want to talk about, now that you pretty much, at this time, you were 2 years in, outside of learning the environment, did you have any similar struggles from Critical Start? Or this time, you just like ready. It's like, oh, I did this before. This is like, I don't want to say cake, but when you come to just like an internal environment versus worrying about different things you may be looking at one place, it's a little bit easier because you can focus more.
Yeah, but it was also like it had different struggles. Like the struggles were probably like learning the systems. Like, because when you're working for MDR, MSSP, you're like, you don't really touch their, like, you know, ticketing system and stuff like that. Sometimes some people do, but like you don't touch as much and like their internal personal stuff.
Like, and what? So,
like, just different internal things, like only what internal users would touch, you know, like in that. And it's kind of confusing.
I think it's different
for everybody.
Yeah, because I know it's like Optiv, we had like access to like a lot of crap. Like, that's why I like that contract so much. Yeah, like, we literally were like there, you know, that level one and two guys. And then we worked hand in hand with that IR team.
Yeah, that's true. It's different for every company. And but I can't say MDR is different too, though, mm-hmm. because you're really focused on alerts. You're not focused on managing their SOC or managing, right. You know what I mean? So, but it's crazy though, because, like with the one I'm at now, like it just took off. Like,
yeah,
I just soared, man, to the heights because like I put two and two together. Like I had a better vision of what security looked like because I'm internal now. I'm not external. I'm in the house, you know, like, you know, I'm in Big Mama's house. Like, this is, we cooking in the kitchen. I'm seeing how she working versus like, I'm looking out, you know, from the window. No, I'm in the kitchen, you know? So like, it's totally different. And man, like, it's just amazing, man. It just, you just kind of take off. You start touching a lot of different things. You start, you know, you want to do projects or whatever. It's just awesome.
I'll tell you right now, cause I've been so busy. So I haven't been actually, but like right now, just make sure you start. If you haven't, write all those things you're doing down. The reason why you're taking off, and because I know a little bit of background about your role, is because you guys took over for something. So it's kind of like y'all started from the ground up. So what seems like, even though you've been there like close to a year, is really like 2 to almost 3 years of experience because of so many different moving parts. Because that's how it was when I was on the contract at Optiv. It was like we took over for another supplier and kind of had to almost scrap everything and kind of just change stuff as we went. And so, like, they still got the contract now because of that work we did. But you started, this don't make sense. This don't look right. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? So now when I go to other places and I'm like, why are y'all doing it like this? This don't make sense. Like, there's a simpler way to do this. Why are we doing it like this? Why do we have this in place and not utilizing it for what we need it for?
Yeah. And the managers. And managers are so crucial because they are the ones that get you the access. They are the one that fight for you when you can't fight for yourself.
And then talk about the good thing about having technical managers.
Yeah.
Some people aren't technical managers, which is cool. But I do feel when you work in SOC, when you work in IR, you need somebody that's been in the trenches before. Maybe they haven't been in the trenches in a while, but you need somebody to kick that muscle memory in and say, hey, did you check for this? Did we do this? When it comes to investigation, a lot of times, like, your manager may be the incident commander, but you are the responder. So they're dictating, okay, I need you to go check this, check this, check this, check this. Oh, did you get this? Or a lot of times, like, oh, I'm already on it. I got it. They'll be like, thanks. Those are things you need. That's how you start learning. When some of the things you're talking about hey, hijacking email threads and kind of tricking somebody you guys probably do business with, thinking that they're you, like putting like the Typo Squad domains and stuff up. Man, it happens all the time. So right now, what's your tool stack like right now that you use?
Man, I don't want to be specific with it, but we use a lot of different tools. I mean,
I don't think it like, nobody knows who we're talking about. So I'm just like, you know, most places they use like a Sentinel, they use a Splunk, they use a CrowdStrike, Atanium, or Carbon Black, you know, like, and I'm only doing it just because maybe somebody hears a tool that they're interested in so they can like say, oh, I went and go learn such and such because I watched the podcast with Carlos and Unry. So it's like one of those things.
Right, right. Yeah, but I want to just keep it general because.
Okay, yeah. Well, say like, I guess you guys use like EDR tools and stuff like that.
Yeah, so we use EDR. We use a lot of cloud-based tools. We use, obviously, our SIEM, our SOAR. And yeah, but those are like the main things where it's like, you know, and you got your vulnerability management tools. But, you know, even just keeping it in general, like, you know, those categories again, it's like, yeah, we use like all those different things. Yeah.
And I'm willing to bet like your biggest alerts are probably like phishing related, aren't they?
No, they're not.
They're not?
Yeah, they're not. They are because I don't primarily work with phishing. I do help out, but that's not primarily what I work with. So a lot of them.
Well, not primarily. I was saying like. Well, not necessarily phishing. Like what we were talking about earlier is just like 9 times out of 10, the end user is the person that's possibly causing the issues more than like most of the time the technologies did most of their job, unless it's a compliance issue and something didn't have some protection on it.
Yeah. So it's like usually like a user, you know, downloading something or clicking. I mean, obviously clicking on something and like those are just, I mean, dude, I think security will always exist. Because the bad guys always try to find a way to make it more confusing, even with AI.
No, you
don't find a way to use AI to, you know.
The hardest one to account for right now, and I think it's because of people not paying attention, is QR codes.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Because you think about it, if a attacker finds somebody in your org's email and say, so-and-so, you know, you need to set up, you know, two-factor authentication, and they kind of make it look like a Microsoft or something, or like Okta, and the person takes their phone out, whether it's a work phone, personal phone, they scan it. On the network, we don't know that they visited it. Not yet unless they start browsing stuff with a secure browser, whatever you got, MDM profile you got on there. So now, whatever's happened, we're going to be late to the party. And then that's when you're going to have to reverse and say, hey, okay, what happened? Oh yeah, I scanned this QR code and this. And so now in the environment, you're going to hopefully have to try to block that and see what's going on. Did somebody start doing like, I worked on some where like there's a MFA fraud where somebody is trying to log in somebody's thing. So they have like been compromised where what happens is, and this is like always user base. They are calling into the help desk acting like somebody else. So they were able to get MFA put on their device. And so now they're trying to log in. But the other person realizes, hey, that's not me, and raises a ticket. And then that's what starts our investigation. And so those are the fun things. And that's why I say based on your environment, it depends on how much fun you'll have. And that's the reason why when people ask about the blue team and IR, it's like, that's where it's
at. It can get really fun too. I mean, and the way things come in are different. Like you will have alerts. Sometimes you'll have threat intel tell you, hey, we found this. We got these different tools in our environment, and this is what we need to jump on.
Yeah.
And or it may be social media.
Yeah, you see, I mean, all these different threats and stuff that's been coming in with all these different vulnerabilities just in Q1 alone have been crazy. And you have your threat intel working on it. Hey, let's go see if we have anything or we're susceptible to this. Are we using this? Okay, hey, we don't need to use this anymore. Why do you need to use it? You know, why are you using your machines to go visit these known malicious sites? All different type of stuff that you work on with the users. But I'm trying to see if I could ask you, this might be a good question. What's one thing about your job that nobody else would, I want to say like a hot take or something that you agree with, but a lot of people would disagree with. Yeah.
Hmm. something I would agree with, but that everyone else would agree with.
Right.
I would say probably the AI stuff, man. Like, I think in our industry, we see that it's being used. It's people are finding it more profitable. Like, they're incorporating it into a lot of their workflows and stuff like that. And a lot of people disagree with that. They're like trying to stay away from it. Like, it's the big bad monster. And they're like, oh man, it's going to take over. It's going to take our jobs. And it's like, no, it's actually going to make us better. And it make us respond quicker and faster. And yeah, it's not going, you know, and yeah. a lot of companies, like, they disagree with that. Like, you know, like,
yeah, I think a lot of people disagree with it just because from the data privacy thing of the AI and who owns it, the tool, facts, and who's behind it. So that's like one of those things. I see it a lot. But
if your company has, you know, a contract with a provider or something like that, you know, like,
it gets rocky. It really gets rocky with the AI, but it can be beneficial. You should understand it. Security personnel should do all they can to get in these AI startups, especially that's going to be probably securing some stuff from AI, because right now people are using AI to clone voices.
Right. And on top of that, the large language models are being compromised. So they have these language models that are being compromised, and they're like kind of like an injection, you know, like where you're putting in a prompt and you're injecting, you know, code in it to do something to be able to get a user when they're going to go, you know, when they're going to go, yeah, do their prompts.
All those different things. Like, but that's the good about use cases and just staying aware, like, why they exist. And that's one of the things now is, like, if I'm in an interview or something, or I'm talking to a new client, like, how do you stay up to date? I'm like, well, use my Slack space. We got a security thing on there. Like, think about, we just heard more about, I think Change Healthcare paid the ransom. Like, they just bought some pharmacies back online. Like, the possibilities are endless. You can find a industry to get in and really help them out. But the thing with security that you always see is, like, how do we stay secure but still be do what we do and still be creative in certain aspects? And it's like, we don't want y'all to stop doing your work. We just want y'all to be secure. That's all we want. Because you make it harder on us when we have to go do stuff that could have been mitigated just by simple security controls. I typically tell people most breaches are caused by negligence. Most incidents are mostly caused by negligence.
Yeah, and
most
like of the time not changing, by, you know, account passwords.
Passwords, not rotating access keys.
It's like, think about it. It's like in your own life. Like, whenever you're lazy about things, like, that's when you can easily get compromised. Like, you know, like, I think about, like, in a hacker is like kind of how Satan is. Like, he kind of goes around and he's going to, you know, essentially look for easy door open it, like laziness, you know, like, if you're not being disciplined, doing what you're supposed to be doing. Like, he wants the easy, the low-hanging fruit, you know?
Low-hanging fruit, and then it turns into something big. I definitely agree with that. Side note, outside of that, did you hear about Akira Toriyama?
No, I haven't.
He passed away.
Who is that?
That is the creator of Dragon Ball Z.
Man.
He was only 68.
That's crazy.
I think he had an aneurysm. Let me see if I can find something.
That game's legendary. The show, legendary.
One of my favorite parts of DBZ is, let me see if I can play it real quick. Bro, why is my phone?
What's that? Yama Yama. How do you say it? How did
Kamehameha?
Like, no, I'm talking about whenever, you know, you do the power up, you do the.
That's what it is, a Kamehameha. Okay. It's one of my favorite parts of it.
Yes, that's how it happened. That's how I became a Super Saiyan. The sleeper has awakened. I am the Prince of all Saiyans once again.
Dang, they cut it off too fast. But, like, man, I got some iconic moments. Like, and earlier we were talking about believing in yourself or whatever. There's a distinct thing between people are amazed by how many black people like anime. Most of the time, because the protagonist is a person who's had a bad life and they make it work and they exceed all expectations. These shows that I grew up watching are like help with that. Literally. Goku pretty much went to Earth, hit his head, raised by somebody else. was really supposed to be, I want to say he was supposed to be killed at birth. And then he was stronger than the Prince of Saiyans and all this other stuff that started happening, but he's overachiever. Naruto family pretty much died when he was being, when he was born and ostracized by the village, exceeded and became like the, pretty much the president of the village. Like there are different things that, that happen in these shows. And so that's like a lot of things that happen now. Training, like you talk about going to the gym and stuff like that. I've been really busy. So I've, that's one area I've slacked in, unfortunately, but I'm about to get back on it. But those dudes is ripped. We want to go to the gym looking like Vegeta and Goku. Like you can't really look like that, but like, it's just no different things. Like you'll hear women say, they'll talk about like cartoons, but like, no, these animes are very, very deep. A lot of them have a lot of complex storylines that come in with people's brothers dying in front of them or finding out like they had a, the wrong, somebody wasn't their dad, it's their actual dad, or just different things.
Yeah.
Different things that they take from like that's happening in society. Like in a lot of animes, a lot of writers will use a lot of like their lore, that stuff that's happening in there. So there's a lot of good things that happen right there.
But too. You know, foreign shows like the new Godzilla is a great example. Like they focus, like I think nowadays, man, we're just pushing so much content and we're forgetting about substance, you know?
We've been watching Shogun. Me and my lady have been watching Shogun on FX. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. That's, you can tell like pacing, cinematography, the acting, the actors they got into it is like chef's kiss. It's perfect. So I'm always a sucker for that.
Yeah.
And if I could tell you really put in the work, like different shows, I'm always a sucker for that. But before we end, I'm going to ask you this because you did technically. Oh, this is actually it. He's been supposed to record another testimonial for me for a while. So now we're going to make him do the testimonial on the pod. But you know me, I'm super busy. Like to be honest, I don't advertise nearly as much as I should. Honestly, I feel like I shouldn't have to because the work speaks for itself. I'm one of the few people that have people you can go look up and verify they do what they do, and I've helped them, and then their names are on my page. But if somebody's to ask you, hey, you worked with Textual Consulting before, should I work with him? Like, what would you tell them?
Dude, I don't even think about it as Textual Consulting because, bro, like, it's so personal. Right. You know, like, whenever we work together, and we still work together to this day, like, dude, I started with you when it was just $50, you know, when it was nothing, where we had one-on-one sessions and I could call you at any time of the day. Like, that's when I started with you. And I went back with you and I paid whatever the price was, and I'll still pay whatever the price is today because I believe in it. And I don't think about it as, hey, it's going to give me this great job, blah, blah, blah. No, I just think of it, it's just an additional package that I bring with me whenever I'm on my hunt. You know, it's like an extra tool. You know, it's an extra tool in my tool bag when I'm on the hunt. And so, bro, I recommend it, but don't think that, like, you know, it's going to, you know, do all these things for you, but use it for what it's meant to be. It's a coach. You know, like when you're in a game, you're still playing the game. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm not training, if I'm not, you know, producing like I need to do as an individual, then the coach still can't help me. But the coach is meant to help you strategies. He's calling the timeouts. He's helping you with understanding the plays. Like, this is what we're going to run against this defense. This is all these things. Like, that's what it is. But it's not like, you know, it's not like, hey, I'm going to win the game for you. So no. So that's how I think about it. And, yeah, I mean, I'm using you probably until you die or until I leave, you know, like this, what I'm doing. I mean,
yeah, no, that's good because I tell people all the time, like a lot of people came back to me like, yo, I'm rocking with you because you're honest and you're raw and you're giving it to me straight, because I'm just a person where I just take my integrity with my business or me helping people so high. Like a lot of people are paying a lot of money for different courses and programs, which I don't care about the money because it's all about what you get out of it. But I think it's that lack of intimacy or that connection that they are not getting from like paying all that. Like with me, you actually get to talk to me. You actually get to, like I said, if I see something I know you're looking for, connecting you with that. Oh, I got a friend that do this. Let me see if I can bring them in for a mock interview. You're getting different stuff way more than what I'm charging you, because my goal is to help you get in. Like I have people right now, like I don't really just kick people out and say, okay, after 3 months, I can't help you no more. I really work with you all throughout the year because that's the goal, right? Not to get paid. Like, that's why I'm not, that's why you ain't seen no ads. Like, hey, come get with me and get in cybersecurity in 14 days or come do it in a month. I'd be rich. You know it and I know it. If I was out there doing some, if I had you recording for me and I was in the Lambo and with my laptop and saying, do like this. And if you want to do like this, get with me, I'd be rich. But that's not going to help nobody get in because it's not easy. Like outside of your skills and studying and everything else, cybersecurity, sometimes getting in is about right time and right place.
Facts.
For you, that was the right time and place and it just worked out for you like that.
Facts.
For me, moving out here to Dallas, when I moved out here, my grandma ended up dying, what was that, September 2016? I moved out here in like June 2016. So shortly after that, she had already been sick for a while, died. And I said, I was in the knock. I'm getting grad school. Let me do that. But it seems like that's what I was supposed to do because right after grad school, no. While I was there in 2016, like people already know my story, I went to the job fair at Intel, that's in Plano, and talked to them. And the manager or who was hiring me at the time liked me. And so after I got in grad school, I followed back up on it, email, right time, right place. The manager was like, yo, hey, can you come up here today? I said, when? I was hooping. LA Fitness was hooping. I put a whole suit on to go talk to that man just for him to say in three words, when can you start? So that was like my right time, right place moment. So sometimes it do come to that. Sometimes you're not in the right time, right place. Sometimes some is telling you, hey, you need to move and you're scared to move. Listen and be obedient and good things happen.
Yeah, and just being persistent and not being afraid to fail. Like, and also don't take it personal.
It's just business.
Yeah, it's just business and, you know, maybe, you know, it's like going on a date. A date is a great example. Like, a lot of times it don't, like, you know, you kind of going on a date, you feeling how she feel, you know, you feeling how you feel. You're like, nah, I don't want to go on a second date. It's not impersonal. Maybe there's something that I need to work on or something that she don't like or something I don't like, you know, but it's, don't take it personal. Yeah. Just keep going, you know?
It's just business. I always tell people that. I always tell the young man, I always equate everything to dating. When it comes to interviewing, if I'm saying, how you doing? My name is Andre. Who is this guy? I can't trust him to run an incident on the bridge call. But if I get on that, yeah, how you doing? My name is Andre Davis. I got 10 years of experience. I work with this tool, this tool, this tool. I primarily work on these incidents, and I believe these core skills I have will be an asset to your team. They're attracted. If I go up to a young lady, even though I'm not going up to a young lady, I'm like, how you doing today? My name is so-and-so. Oh, what you do? What's your name? Oh, you want to go get something to drink sometime? Whatever. I'm persistent. And then I'll say, yo, I'm going to schedule it. I'm going to set it up. Be persistent. Be assertive. But don't be cocky. But that, like, everything with job searching and dating the same way. And then now when you get the job, you kind of look at it like you can say it's only different because you can't say married because, like, unless like you own the job, you can't stay forever unless like those days are over. But if it is a place that's showing you love and you get to move up around, but now you got to keep on doing the stuff that you did to get the job in order to maintain and stay better. That's the thing now that we've been preaching. Like, a lot of us who were in tech jobs before 2020, we still here. Some of the people who got in through fraudulent ways through the pandemic, they've been struggling. And that's because they had a bad foundation. Their foundation was built on sand.
Oh, man. Come on now.
Listen, I do not frequent churches when I YouTube, but do not get it messed up. That's what we did. I was a musician where we was at a church where the scriptures was on the screen. It wasn't just my uncle was up there just saying stuff that he wanted to make you feel good. No, we were scripture based. So,
hey, and the analogy, the parables, man, they stand the test of time to this day. Talking about the foundation,
yeah, because you just was talking about the roaring lion, seeing who they may devour.
Yeah, like
they don't know. Somebody gonna preach right now. They screaming right now, home.
And I always think about, like, when I'm picking up something, I'm thinking like, how would, because you need to kind of take it out of something that you don't know to something that you do know.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm all about my faith. So I'm taking it to, oh, like, how does the enemy work? You know, and that same enemy can be compared to,
yeah,
you know, how an attacker would work, you right. know?
Or just like I was talking about something is telling you to move and we could bring up like anything. Or we talk about what was it? Caleb and Joshua. They told him to go walk around the walls of Jericho how many times?
I couldn't tell you. Was it 75 or something?
712. I don't know. Y'all know the story. But anyway, the walls start coming down, which I think that can also be a parable for like internally, spiritually, and mentally. But they went and did it, and it happened. And they told Noah it's going to be a great flood, and everybody looking at him stupid, but he prepared for the rain.
Yeah.
Or one of my favorite ones is I used to love like all those. I forgot who used to run these movies. But the, what was it called? Fireproof, Facing the Giants.
Are you talking about the Kendrick brothers?
Whatever they are, but yeah, like Facing the Giants and stuff like that. Yeah. And they tell the coach about the two farmers, one complaining about the rain, one prepared for it. Like, which one are you going to be? Are you going to complain about it not raining, or are you going to prepare for the rain so when it rains, you're going to be ready? It's some of you complaining right now that I ain't got the interview, I'm doing all this and that ain't working. You're going to keep complaining. Or you going to keep on preparing for it. So when it's time to get that job that's meant for you, you're going to knock it out the park. That's what I want you to remember.
Yeah.
If you don't take nothing else away from this, that's what you need to take away from this. You're going to know when, it's just weird. You know when the road, it just feels so right when you just feel like it's coming to you. I can't explain it, but it's just like, oh, what? Y'all want to offer me? Okay. Okay. What would be like, you know, a couple of things you would want to leave the audience with right now?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, multiple things, but I think what we talked about earlier in the conversation, which is the mindset, I believe that's the most important thing. How you think about where you're at, where you're going, and also just to be humble, man, like ask a lot of questions and don't think that you know it all. I mean, pride is like the killer of momentum. But humility is a great slide into the next thing, that whatever it is that you want to do. And so just remember, man, be humble, stay hungry, you know, and the opportunities are out there. They're just waiting on you to step up to the plate. Really, there's like how many jobs are there out there? Like they talk about it need to be filled all the time.
They say it's like 500,000. I have my own. I did a video on that. I got my own thoughts on it. But it's they out there.
They want these crazy amount of like skills and nobody has them. But the reality is that they're out there. You know what I mean? And you're, you know, you could be that person. So anyways, so just keep your head up and keep pushing.
Nice. And I want to leave y'all with this because I want y'all to always remember this when it come to me.
I might tell you a joke, but I'll never tell you a lie.
I'm telling you.
I might tell you a joke, but I never tell you a lie.
Yeah, for real.
Hey, it's been good rocking with y'all, but until next time, let's stay textual and we out. Peace.